On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we have a monster show for you. All of the anarchy that happened from Friday and John Gruden's first email to all the other stuff released to him getting fired. We shove that all into this show. Plus, we talked about the Bears' loss. Plus, we have our favorite guest, Sanjeet T, here today. Monster show. Hope you enjoy it. No breakdown of the Broncos game. We're going to save that just for our YouTube. Not making a habit of that. It's just because of how big the show is and everything happening in the news. So make sure you go to our YouTube to check out everything, but also the breakdown for Raiders versus Broncos. And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares. The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. He's Juan Soto. I'm RJ Clifford. Let's have some fun today. Probably a small show. Not a lot to talk about.
Nothing really happened.
No big deal. Kind of a quiet day in the what? John Gruden gone. Bam. Poof. Disappeared. Like a magic act. Like he threw like a puff of smoke on the floor.
Like a poof. Fart in the wind.
And the cancel culture just ripped him out and he disappeared. Gone. It's wild, man. It's crazy. Like, I remember I told my wife that when it happened, I told my wife, she's like, what? How? Why? What? It was just, I mean, I guess it kind of, we obviously kind of saw it coming with the first email on Friday and then the New York Times report earlier this week. And then once that came out, I was like, okay, like, I don't know how he's going to be able to get out of this. And what was it, 3 hours since that New York Times report came out? Like 3 hours after John Gruden was, less than 3 hours, John Gruden resigned.
Less than
gone.
That, yeah.
Yeah.
That's why, like, when I first got wind of the story, I text you guys the link, and I said one thing, really short. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
And that was it. Because I knew that this was the tip of the iceberg, and this was going to be bad. Mm-hmm. Because if John Gruden felt comfortable enough to send that to somebody, there's a lot more he has to say. And it got a lot worse.
So
in volume, at least, not in content. Everything, all of it was bad. So it wasn't worse in content. It was just in volume and frequency.
So if you missed it, John Gruden in an email to the former team president of the Washington football team, that was the original email about the NFLPA's lips, and he was a black guy, so obviously there's that. So there's the racial trope, and then in the New York Times article, they got a hold of some other emails leaked to them, which we'll get to here in a little bit about the leak. And there was comments about Michael Sam, the first openly gay player drafted in the NFL. Like Gruden had to say about that. He had thoughts about the female referees in the NFL. He basically hit the trifecta. He went racial. He went homosexual. He went gender. He hit them all. Like he hit the trifecta and all the things that you just literally cannot say in 2021 in today's society.
Yeah, you know, the only thing he didn't hit was like religious,
right? It's like, how'd the Jews make it out of here scot free? Like, how did Gruden not hit on that? You'd think he'd, it's like, all right, who didn't get trounced verbally by John Gruden in these emails?
Hey, we don't know that. There's 650,000
emails. The funniest part about all this was how the media kept bringing up how, like, yeah, it was a racial trope. Comments about Michael Sam, comments about female referees, and Roger Goodell. Like Roger Goodell needs, like, a bulletproof vest? Like, a dude that makes, like, $50 million a year? It's like, how is this, like, anger towards Roger Goodell getting thrown into this mix?
Yeah, he wasn't employed by the NFL at the time. He can say whatever the hell he wants, you know? He's just a freaking guy.
I will admit.
He worked for ESPN.
The funniest part of all those emails is when he called Roger Goodell a football-hating pussy.
That was pretty funny.
That's pretty funny. That's something I can get. If only that email was linked, was the one that leaked, I think he'd be even more popular with NFL fans, as opposed to just like that's how it works, right? Like, depending on what gets leaked is like, that is like the context is what gets out. Like, that's what affects people. It's like,
Goodell got his clap back. You know, he got his clap back. He's like, oh, you called me this. Okay. Well, guess what? Out of all these 650,000 emails, you're the only one that said shit. So you're the one that's going to pay.
And that's the thing here is of 650,000 emails that were investigated, and they were investigated because of Dan Snyder and the Washington football team's problems. Like, John Gruden just caught, John Gruden caught like shrapnel in a war he wasn't in, you know, and he was collateral damage in something that wasn't even part of the investigation. And so this only happens on purpose. Like, it wasn't like the Wall Street Journal and then followed by the New York Times sent journalists to like hack computers of the NFL to figure this out, or sent journalists to dig through the trash cans behind the NFL of thrown away, shredded secret documents that they like spent thousands of hours taping together. It wasn't that. It was leaked. Someone purposefully went through those 650,000 emails and only took out the John Gruden parts and purposefully leaked them to the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. Who that was, why they did it, I don't know. But this wasn't just like someone on the assignment desk doing their due diligence. Yeah. Someone purposefully wanted this information to get out.
And his name is Smodger Smodell.
Do you think it's that simple that he just hates the Raiders and hated John Gruden and wanted to bury him for calling him a football hating pussy?
You know, honestly, and I don't think either one of us is trying to say that what John Gruden got, he didn't deserve. Mm-hmm. What we're saying is it's interesting that out of that many emails that John Gruden is the only one that was singled out. And throwing a pity party for him or making excuses for him at all. We'll get into this later, but
like, John Gruden got his punishment. Like, yeah, that part's done.
Just deserved.
Like,
he got
that book. That book is closed. It's no longer like, what's the point of continuing to bury John Gruden? Like, he got the death penalty. He got the hardest. He had the richest coaching contract in football. And now there could be lawsuits moving forward. We'll get into that later, but like, he got his penalty. Like, he got as bout in trouble as you can be for sending those emails. Now, what's the next step of this story? Who did it? Why did they do it? Who else is out there?
Like, he didn't send those emails to himself. Mm-hmm. And I doubt that he just threw out all these pretty nasty things that he said on a one-way conversation.
Yeah.
Anytime that I've ever said some stupid shit, like, not even close to that, but anytime I said some stupid shit, it's always been, especially with someone I consider a friend, it's always been a two-way street.
Yeah.
And
well, and also neither one of us are important enough for this to matter, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's going to be no outrage. Like the, you know, like some of the Instagram accounts that you follow and the stories you send me, like if that was made public and you were like the NFL head coach, it'd be a problem. But it's you and me. No one gives a shit. And that kind of leads to what I'm talking about is that with John Gruden, and this happens every single time any sort of person in the spotlight gets a punishment for something they said, right? Not something they did, something they said. And there's a very big difference because I don't think I've ever been offended by what someone says. I get offended by people's actions, right? And so when people ask like, oh, was John Gruden canceled or simply held accountable? The answer is both. The answer is both. He was held accountable for what he said. And when you represent an NFL football team, you are held to a higher standard. And, you know, when you're making $10 million, like when you get hired to run, you know, the fry-a-later at Burger King, no one really cares if you're what you are, homophobic, right? No one cares. Like, you're not important enough to matter. When you're basically the face of a franchise, which John Gruden is, he right? Was, sometimes. Yeah. sometimes it's a quarterback, sometimes it's an owner, sometimes
not for the Raiders, you know, man.
Not for the Raiders, it's John Gruden. Gruden was the celebrity of the Raiders. When you're the face of it, you have to represent yourself as such. And so he was held accountable, but he was also canceled because he was specifically targeted with these emails by someone who wanted him out.
Yeah.
And like purposefully targeted and canceled for what he did. And there's a difference between just like committing a crime and getting punished and having somebody understand how it works in 2021, where if I want John Gruden gone, I can just release these emails and then the anger mob will do the rest for me. And someone will take this over and get rid of him for me. Like he was both. He was held accountable and he was very clearly canceled in every sense of what getting canceled is.
Yeah, you know, and it's not just the words, is his belief system basically, and his beliefs behind those words and how those affected those around him. Not so much in an announcer capacity or an analyst capacity, but definitely in the capacity of basically running a franchise. Like he controlled all just about everything in that organization. And it was more so the feelings behind it and the impact of those feelings on others. And it's just it's tough, man. It's tough, you know, because I struggled with
your
trying
weight?
To separate. Yeah, I struggled for sure my weight.
Being stupid?
No.
You've made peace with that.
Yeah, for sure.
Bad hygiene?
No, I don't have bad hygiene. What are you talking about?
Okay. I'm just trying to go through all the struggles I think you have. Yeah.
Whether I need it or not. I struggled with trying to separate his words from the impact his words had through his position, through his influence, through his authority. And it was tough, man, because honestly, if you just take the words for what they are, if he's like you said, if he's just some guy that works at, like, you know, fucking the copy store down the street, who gives a shit, right? Yeah. But it's more so his influence on other people and his influence on, you know, he's 1/32nd in the NFL. Like, he's 1/32nd in the world.
Yeah.
One out of 32 people in the world that has the type of power that he has. And It's disappointing for sure. I mean, we all knew that John Gruden had a really big ego. All right. We already knew that going in, but just the level of narcissism that he has and just the smugness that he showed. I was upset by his email. I'm like, oh man, that's why I text you. Uh-oh. Like, this is not good. But yeah. That's all I had to say was, uh-oh. That's all I had to say. And I knew that this is not good. And then to hear him on Sunday basically saying, I'm not racist. I called and apologized, and I don't want to talk about it anymore. It's like that level of just entitlement. Like, okay, you caught me. I said I'm sorry. What else do you fucking want? Mm-hmm. And he just – maybe it was just him trying to push through it because he knew he was going to be in –
You want to get past it. And it was a Friday night. He had a game in 2 days, right? It's like –
Just the smug arrogance, it just that really turned me off. Like, oh yeah, I'm done talking about it. Like, wait a second, no, you're not, because the people that get the information to inform others, which is the media, have questions. They have questions about your explanation. They have questions about your reasoning behind that you said. They have questions behind that lame excuse that you gave. Like, there's a lot of questions to be answered that's still left to be answered, honestly. And he's like saying, oh, well, I'm done talking about it. Like, come on, man. That just shows me that he doesn't get it. He doesn't get it. Like, he gets it now. I really don't think he does get it. He gets it in the sense of like, oh, this cost me my job. But I really don't think that he sees that. I think he feels he got a raw deal. That's what I think. I think he feels he got a raw deal.
Well, I mean, and that's again the thing with John Gruden is he got both. He got what was coming to him and a raw deal. He was held accountable for what he said, and he was targeted and canceled. Like, he got it all, right? He got the double double, right?
I don't see him getting that getting him getting a raw deal. I mean, if you look at compared to everybody else, think about it.
How many other NFL owners, coaches, executives, and players have said similar things in emails? Almost like the same things in emails.
I understand that, but
you know what I'm saying? He was the one targeted specifically for something a large swath of people have done. So again,
I agree with
not defending what he did, but he was the, you know, if you're
targeted is one thing, being given a raw deal is another. I think he was targeted, he was given a raw deal.
Right. If you're in a riot in the street and you and 100 other people are looting a local Best Buy, and there's 100 other people loaded up with laptops and iPhones and iPads and TV and, you know, 60-inch TVs, and you're the one dude the cops are able to, like, grab, take down, and arrest, you're like, God, dude, there are 99 other people doing exactly what I did. And
again,
it's like, okay.
That's not a raw deal.
Maybe you
were targeted. So there's a video. Hang on. There's a video of this, of a bunch of people pushing down a barricade to sneak into a music festival, an EDM festival. And they actually caught a dude that had one leg. Now, I'm not fucking
How'd
with
they
you.
Catch him?
I
That's
swear
impossible.
To God. He had one leg. So he had like a fake leg. It wasn't one of those cool ones that you could run on either. So
it's like a peg leg, like a pirate.
Did he get a raw deal? No. Was he targeted? Probably, because he was going to be the easiest one to catch. So I don't think John Gruden got a raw deal. I do think, though, he was targeted. And there's a big difference between the two.
Well, look, because the emails that we have been given, the media has been leaked to, are so specifically Gruden, we don't know so much. Like you said, you know, when you're talking, you know, when you're making jokes like this or talking this way, like, the person on the other end of that phone or that email or that text message, they're generally responding with similar stuff, right? Like, it's kind of a two-way street. You're on an email with four people, all the people talk about it. And that's just the one John Gruden tree. That doesn't even touch all the other owners, coaches, players, executives that do this, and people that are representative of organizations. And that's what I'm saying. Just like you, this isn't a defense of John Gruden, but this was clearly John Gruden in the crosshairs for something that I think is pretty safe to say semi-prevalent in the NFL and semi-prevalent all over the world. Like, one of the guys I work with at the UFC is like, yeah, you know, this isn't surprising. Like, how many rich white NFL owners talk like this? I'm like, how many broke young Mexican guys do I know that talk like this? Like, this isn't just an NFL problem or just an old white person problem. Like, Americans talk like this. Again, not saying it's okay.
Intolerance, it's an issue.
It's everywhere, right? Like, it's every rich, poor, black, white, young, old. Like, it's everywhere. And John Gruden, again, did the wrong thing, said the wrong things, has a poor mindset. But he was very specifically targeted by somebody, and it worked.
I have a theory.
I'm all ears.
People like to slow play Mark Davis. They play him for a sucker. You know what I'm saying? Like, they think he's not as smart as he is.
It doesn't make any sense. He's so fashionable. Like, how could you look at that guy in his salon style haircut and think he was a pushover? That's impossible.
Yeah, it's just like Billy Hoyle in White Man Can't Jump. It's hard work making something this pretty look like a geeky chump. So I think he went to Goodell and he's like, Goodell, how do I get out of this contract, man? I need to get out of this fucking contract. And he's like, I got you, fam.
He's like, dude,
don't trip.
Hey, I saw an email. And this is Goodell talking. Like, I was sitting through John Gruden emails, and he was telling me to suck his dick.
I got some shit for you.
We're both on the same team. Let's get rid of this guy. Look, I'm open to anything. Like, was this all about the NFL?
Who knows,
guy?
Man? That's right? Like, talking shit. Was it? God, was it a, damn.
Was it as simple as a grudge that Goodell had against Gruden? Was it your theory where Mark Davis wanted to get out of this $100 million contract? It's a fake theory,
by the way.
Was it the NFLPA guy that just like, hey, I think, you know, the NFL wants him to stay the head of the Players Association, so let's make him feel like the victim here and make him be kind of a martyr here, like, because he's all about it. Like, you look at his tweets, he's all like just playing this up as much as he can, right?
And the thing is, man, it's like, dude, what the fuck? He is so arrogant. John Gruden is so, it's so just, he was just so like, he had this like invincibility mentality that he just went after the most powerful two people in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And like, he went after a pretty fucking hard too. And you know, like the head of the league, and then the guy who controls the league, and then the guy who controls the players, basically, mm-hmm. in their interest. It's like, man, is he gonna? He fucking went straight to the top, dude. Like, he was not fucking around, and you know, he paid the fucking price for having that fucking, you know, antiquated freaking viewpoint on things.
So the theories that could go with why it was Gruden and why this whole thing happened, there's two directions it could go on. Either one, the people who did this didn't think it through, and they wanted to do something they did that I think was that they thought would be small and contained. Or the people who did this have like all the power. Like, if this goes straight to the top, they're orchestrating something that I don't, that is spiraling out of control. They weren't expecting, because with just this little, like, there's no way fans, media, everybody looks at these little like 0.0001% of these emails about John Gruden, thinks, okay, I'm satisfied. That's all I need to see. It's I want to know Pandora's responses to the people that he was talking to. And this is all for something way worse. The Washington football team's investigation to running a shady organization and treating people with, you know, bigotry and sexism. And, you know, they were like, this is the best part, is how there was like an email back and forth between Gruden and the Washington football team about a photo shoot that the Washington football team was doing with the cheerleaders of their team, mm-hmm. topless, and they're sharing photos. It's like, how is that on Gruden? That's like the most, like, the Washington football team should be held responsible for that. Gruden's just like on the receiving end. It's like, all right, Soto, if you send me a bunch of photos of topless cheerleaders, I'm opening that file, right? I'm partly to blame, but you are fully more to blame, right? But no, it's the John Gruden part. Like, I want to see that part, all the Washington football stuff part. Like, that's what the NFL, whoever leaked this, opened a can of worms that either they just want to see the world burn, or it's spiraling in a way that no one expected. Because if every single NFL owner, NFL coach, NFL executive, player, important person in the NFL, you get to see all their emails for the last 10 years, what they thought was information, there's going to be no NFL left. Like,
yeah, I think you and I can get a job maybe there now.
Yeah, we could probably get a job at the Raiders right now. They're out a head coach. They're new team president. They're going to interview interim coaches coming up. Like, there's a giant hiring sign in front of Allegiant Stadium right now, the Raiders headquarters in Vegas.
And the thing is about those cheerleaders, like, that was like the least of my worries. It wasn't like they were in the locker room and they snuck pictures of them. You know what I'm saying? It was a fucking topless photo shoot. Okay. It was a topless photo shoot. It's like me and you sharing Instagram chick fucking butt pics. You know, it's like, it's not, they're
you shared the butt pics. I shared the boob pics. You know,
it's true. And it's like, they're putting it out there and we can't share it. Like, just because I saw it and he didn't, I mean, he didn't get to see it ever.
So the NFLPA is currently petitioning the NFL to release all the emails. Every NFL media organization is petitioning the NFL to see those emails. And now it's just a matter of time, because you'll start to, you know, so much of the NFL media is kind of in bed with the NFL, and they, you know,
it's never going to happen, dude.
You know, it's going to be tough. Happen. But there's enough outside independent media, because look, the New York Times, they don't give a shit about the NFL, right? It's not like ESPN or like Pro Football Talk or like someone like embedded with them, right? There's big news organizations that are involved in this, right? The Wall Street Journal was the original one, and the New York Times was the second outlet that did this. Those are the media outlets that can really enact change in the NFL and really put true pressure on the NFL to do something about this. Because remember, all these 32 owners, most of them have businesses outside of the NFL.
That's how they make their money, yeah.
Right? Like Mark Davis is the rare one where he's just like all Raiders, nothing else. Like, that's it. Like, he doesn't even own, you know, like a lemonade stand when he was a kid. Like, he's all
he
Raiders.
He owns the Vegas, what are they called?
The WNBA team?
Yeah.
Yeah, like so basically, so 99% Raiders, right?
Yeah.
Well, these other owners, like, they don't want to deal with pressure in their other side, their other businesses. Like, they don't want to deal with media and political pressure outside. Like, this,
I highly doubt anything else is going to come out. I highly doubt anything else is going to come out from this, because it's the power that the NFL. It's two things. It's twofold. First, like you said, if they just open the floodgates and let everything out. I'm not going to say every single, but there's going to be a lot of people, and I'm talking about a lot of people on a lot of teams losing their jobs.
Yeah. All right? There's a lot. Every NFL owner and team president right now is on the phone with their IT department. Like, okay, let's go through my how do we delete the hard drive? How do we delete the mother drive and the father drive, the motherboard and the fatherboard too? Like, how does that work? Like, tell me how to do it, because I want to do it right now.
But also, having that information and not sharing it, that's also a power play by the NFL against the owners. Because, hey, who's to say if you fucking pull a Gruden and start talking shit, maybe this stuff leaks out. Maybe
if any one of you call me a football-hating pussy, I'm gonna get you canceled.
But I could just totally hear him saying that too. And that Goodell.
Yeah, why couldn't have just that been leaked? That would have been great. That'd be a fun story.
I would have laughed my fucking ass off.
That would have been a hilarious story instead of what we're doing now. So that's the story. I disagree. I think this story will continue to evolve. You're saying it's probably going to hit a brick wall. We'll see. Time will tell.
What I'm saying is the NFL is going to have a fucking death grip on these emails. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they're going to be – I don't think anyone can force them to fucking release the emails. So I think that they're just gonna freaking let it go, and then just keep the emails covered. Yep.
So John Gruden obviously said he resigned. We'll see money wise what that means, right? Between being fired, resigning, I'm sure that money stuff was probably figured out beforehand before he left. Potential lawsuits in the future. I'm not even gonna bother speculating. We'll see what happens. This could be years in the making, figuring out.
Yeah,
like $100 million contracts. Aren't just like figured out in an afternoon. They aren't just ended with, like, you know, like the secretary of a law firm like stamping something. Like, it's $100 million deal.
Shanahan and what's his name? Mm-hmm. The young guy from USC. What was his name? Coached the Raiders for a little bit. Kiffin.
Lane Kiffin.
They still haven't gotten paid.
Yep. So this could be a thing.
Shanahan's
this
been like 15 years, 20 years. Yeah, it's man, it's deal. Been a long time.
So he's out. Rick Bisaccia is in, interim head coach. I knew almost nothing about him until this week. I knew he was the special teams coach, and he'd been around forever. He's one of those rare, like, 61-year-old coaches that looks way younger than he is. He's one of those dudes where, like, football kept him young. You know, you look at him and you're like, oh, this is a, you know, it's a. What is he, like, 40, 43? You're like, oh, he's 61. Like, oh, my God, really?
Dude, a fucking reporter mispronounced his name after he said it three times. Mm-hmm. And he's like, Bisaccia.
But isn't that, like, the perfect example of what's going on with him? Like, people don't even know his name. You know what I mean? Like, you can't even pronounce his name. Like, that's the best example. Like, look at this guy.
That's a
strong, he's got the white beard. Bro. Right? Strong goatee, you know, no real wrinkles.
Bro,
he's
look
at that kind of Gruden, way younger
mustache,
than
looks. His mustache goes from his nostril over his lip. That is so hard.
it's that thick Italian blood, right? Like,
bro,
that's one thing Italians are great at. It's like good body hair, you know?
He's got some fucking seasoning stash in that thing. Good for him.
So he's now the interim head coach.
We should try to get him on the show.
Yeah. He's got nothing going on. I'm sure he's not busy, right? Promise him we'll be able to pronounce his name correctly. So almost nothing out of Mark Davis, according to Mayock. And Mike Mayock, Darren Waller, Derek Carr, Max Crosby, and the new interim coach, Rich, all spoke at a press conference today. Mayock went first, and then a couple hours later, the coach and the players did. We've got some audio from Mayock, Bisaccia, and Derek Carr. So a couple things that are getting worked out here. Almost nothing out of Mark Davis. Didn't appear at the press conference. Apparently, according to Mayock, there was a team meeting after this happened on Tuesday, and Mark Davis did like the details of how this panned out because he got the emails earlier.
Last week
he's been doing his due diligence and all that. So he kind of talked like front office email stuff.
Yeah.
And then the meeting ended with Bisaccia talking, and he did like the football stuff. And then Mayock was kind of the middle guy as the GM, as he should. I'm the bridge between the front office and personnel and finance with football operations, scouting, what goes on in the practice field, all that kind of stuff. So he's doing his job, right? He's being that bridge. But very little out of Mark Davis, which is kind of shady because they put all of this on Mike Mayock at today's presser. Like at first I was like, is only Mayock speaking? Because he had his own individual presser and wasn't, and much later the coach and the players talked. But that was the right guy to bring up, I think, because Mayock just really, really crushed.
He's a media guy, man. He knows what he's doing.
His presser, right? Like he's
yeah.
He was such a neutered general manager under Gruden. And it just felt that way, right? Like we talked about it all the time. Like, is Mike Mayock even really like, does he have any power whatsoever? Because so many of these picks felt like John Gruden picks, Gruden grinders. He saw one guy like flash something, overpaying running backs. And then other picks felt like Mike Mayock, right? Max Crosby and Hunter Renfrow, like the mid-round picks felt like Mayock, and the big picks and big money signings felt like John Gruden. Lo and behold, we were right. Paul Gutierrez of ESPN tweeted today, just spoke with Raiders owner Mel Davis. I have no comment, ask the NFL. We'll get to that in a second. They have all the answers. Also confirmed that Mike Mayock remains GM and now has 51% control of roster decisions with interim coach Rich Bisaccia at 49%. Originally, it was Gruden 51, Mayock 49.
And what did I say to you?
His numbers.
51% means 100%.
It's just it's kind of like a dumbass way to put the numbers out. Like, if you have the majority rule, then you make the decisions. This 51-49 is just like Mark Davis's way, just kind of like just powdering around the edges to make it look like something it isn't. Yeah, we all know. Gruden had all the power. And he would let Mayock do like the middle rounds that he was like too bored to deal with. So I am personally looking forward to Mike Mayock GMing this franchise unhandcuffed. I'm very much looking forward to seeing what he could do. Cause what felt like Mayock moves had a much higher success rate than what felt like Gruden moves.
Yeah, dude. It's you don't have to look far. Just look at the top of the draft. The first couple rounds, like, they haven't been good, man. We've gotten some players here and there, but I mean, we got Josh Jacobs. Okay, he's a good running back, but you can get good running backs in the fourth.
Spent a first rounder on him, right?
Yeah,
you paid a lot.
Abrams is finally coming into form. Yeah. Mullen's playing well. I mean, and that's about it. You know, it's interesting to see what happens moving forward because we as fans are looking at the situation, and it's one of the rare times in the NFL where the fans have just as much of a clue as the players and like the front office. Because right now, all we know for right now is Coles Bisaccia is going to lead the team against the Broncos. And Ole, which is Coach Olsen, is going to run the offense, and Coach Bradley is going to run the defense, and Bisaccia is going to run the special teams and take care of the in-game flow of the game and stuff like that. And that's all anyone knows.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, I mean, we'll see what happens.
How tough of a position was Mayock in to do this presser today? Like, he's had to, like, he's going to have to talk about John Gruden, a friend of his, and he can't 100% defend him because it looks like he's defending the bigotry. He can't just come down on him. He's a friend, right? And he's at his worst. So he had to, like, balancing act that. He has to talk about.
Pretty easy for him, man. Like, he's a pro, dude.
And we'll play his audio here. He made it look easy. That doesn't mean it's easy, right? It doesn't mean it's easy, even though
anyone could do it. I'm saying because he's such a pro, I don't think it was as difficult for him as you might see.
Well, he had to talk about his friend while writing that line. He had to talk about his boss, Mark Davis, without saying, like, what the hell? Why am I doing all this? He's the owner. Like, why isn't he talking about this? Who's the guy who can fire him and controls his paycheck? So I had to talk about him, handle that great. And he had to talk about his players, where he had to balance the balancing act of, we get some of you are upset. We understand you guys aren't happy. You know, we have the only openly gay player in the NFL, Carl Nassib, obviously, you know, like, whatever, you know, whatever, over half the team is black, you know, whatever that, you know, whatever that number is. But we have a football game on Sunday. Like, he had to balance his boss, his friend, emotions, the team, a game plan, all of that in one presser, and he nailed it, Soto. You listen to it. He absolutely nailed it. I asked myself, like, who's going to be the leader of this organization now, right? Like, who's the leader of the locker room? Who's the leader of the front office? Like, again, interim president, an owner that's just kind of like bailing on all this. The guy who was the czar of the franchise, like, John Gruden was in charge of basically anything you want to be in charge of, is now gone. It feels like Mayock has jumped into that spot, grabbed the reins with both hands, and so far has handled it perfectly in my eyes. From just seeing that brief presser and kind of what we know about him as a guy and a football guy and a GM, I'm glad he's got his hand on the rudder of this ship.
Yeah, it's one of those things where he's been around. He has the advantage of seeing and being involved in the NFL, but from an outsider's perspective, but still being really close to where he's been given a lot of that that grooming that he got for TV, and being able to put a lot of the information that he's received doing scouting and being able to deliver that in a way that's informative but also easy to digest, right? So he has a lot of experience doing that. And so he's comfortable in front of a mic. He's comfortable on TV. He's comfortable talking to the press. And he's not a dumb guy. He's a smart guy. And we haven't heard anything bad about him from anybody, really. Yeah. So Mark Davis seems to like him and trust him enough to basically put the entire franchise, basically have him be the franchise's mouthpiece. So, It's his time to shine now. Everyone thought before the year started that Mayock would be the sacrificial lamb, and looks
might
like
the one that comes smelling roses, wolf, coming out smelling like roses out of it.
The wolf got cut, and the sacrificial lamb is the one, you know, at the top of the hill right now. So it's his time to see what he can do with it. Let's see if he can continue to navigate these you know, rough waters and keep the focus on the field but still at the same time being conscious of the implications of what John Gruden said in those emails and what his actions and behaviors and his way of thinking, how it hurt, you know, the Raiders and everyone else really who was affected.
Here's Mayock on the goals for the season.
As far as the team is concerned, bottom line, we're 3-2. It's week 6. You know, a lot of these interim head coach deals over the years, it's like week 15 and guys are already packing their bags. That's not the case here. All of our goals are ahead of us. 3-2, one game out of the AFC lead. The focus has got to be on Denver.
That's a really great point. Normally, when interim coaches happen every single season, right? Every single season, a coach gets fired and there's an interim coach. But it's almost always because of a poor season or because the team's bombing and the owner's like, all right, why have a lame duck coach here? Let's get rid of him and move on, right? This isn't the case here, right? John Gruden was at the start of the best season of his career in this second stint with the Raiders, of his 10-year deal, of his fourth season. This is the best start he's had. Offense is playing great. Defensive hasn't played this great in forever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything was sunshine and rainbows right now, right? So this was a rare instance where, like, normally when coaches get fired, everyone's already checked out.
Yeah.
Not the case here. And I'm glad Mayock pointed that out and said, all right, guys, you know, you've probably been on teams where a head coach got fired before. This one's different. This isn't like the other times you lost your head coach. We still have 12 games to go, and we want to win as many of them as we can and go to the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, and it's a good kind of you can call it a rallying cry. You can call it a rallying point, or even on the other side, you can call it a distraction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good one because, honestly, it can bring them close together. Like, hey, guys, you know, this puts us, from an outsider's perspective, it could put us at a disadvantage because we lost a person who was basically running the entire organization. Mm-hmm. And he's gone now, and now we're left here picking up the pieces. Let's go show everyone that, you know, we're for real. And everyone in that locker room has something to prove. Every coach, every player, they all have something to prove because the person who was calling all the shots is now gone. Now it's time for everyone else to step up.
Here's more from Mayock.
Here's what I think. I think we have an intelligent locker room. I think over the last 3 years, we've done a pretty good job of bringing in the right kind of people. I've touched base with as many of the guys as I could over the last several days. We talked with the players. The captain spoke up at the team meeting to a certain extent, and boy, were they eloquent. The common denominator from the players has been focus and professionalism, and that's what I've gotten back from them. We've worked too hard. We've put too much into this. We believe in Rich, and we're going forward. We're moving forward.
Now, the Raiders have been known for some, dysfunction in the franchise, in the locker room, on the training field, on the team, you know, on the performance, you know, on the field for a while, right? But I feel like this team now, with a bunch of coaches, you know, there's multiple coaches with head coaching experience.
Three, four now.
A bunch of leaders on the team that don't rock the boat, right? Like, who's the asshole on the team? Like, we don't have an Antonio Brown. We don't have like an Ocho Cinco. Like, we don't have players like that, that at least that we know about, right? It hasn't leaked out. And there's big personality, sure, but there's no poison in that locker room. We got strong leadership. Like, this is, if there's a team that can handle this, I feel like we have that kind of energy in this locker room that could handle something like this. That's something negative, a big push. You know, we don't have Aaron Rodgers bitching about what's going on. We don't have Russell Wilson saying he's going to demand a trade. We don't have players like that, right? Even Trent Brown's gone, Antonio Brown's gone. Like, all guys that were like that, not there anymore. Like, this negatively affects every team. But I feel like if there's one roster of the 32 in the NFL, this is one of them that could handle it the best and maybe turn into a rallying cry, like you said, and turn this into a positive as best you can. So when tragedy strikes, like, you know, when siblings lose a parent, they grow closer, right? Is this something like this could be the type of family that can do that?
From all accounts, yeah. You know, from what you hear from the way Derek Carr talks about the locker room, the way that Waller has talked about the locker room and Crosby. And, you know, Unique, he said when he got here, he's like, man, these guys are ready. They're ready to take this next step. Like, I came in here as the new guy, and everyone's like, hey, man, you got to catch up. Like, we're putting in work, and you need to catch up. Not that he wasn't putting in work, but when he came in, it's like, this is what we do here now. This is what we want to get done. So it could definitely be a rallying point. And an emphasis, like a galvanizing experience for them all, you know, to just get stronger together and you know, be able to trust each other that much more.
Here's Mayock on losing essentially like the czar of the franchise.
I don't see a vacuum of leadership, okay? And I want to be really clear about that. Rich Bisaccia is the best leader I've ever been around. Okay? The players respect and love Rich Bisaccia. So from that perspective, he and I are all in together on this. 100%. Okay? We're 3-2. And so any kind of conversation about what we're going to do after the season to me is premature. You're going to let this season play out. We're going to see what happens. And I'm going to back this son of a gun unequivocally.
Dude, I love his fucking water bottle. It said, just win, baby. Did you see that?
Every time he hydrates, he just thinks of Lombardi trophies. So they're backing the new interim coach. They're backing Rich. And
they need to. They need to. There's no half-stepping here.
Because it's a weird – because it's a super weird point, right? Like, if you're – I don't think anyone really genuinely thinks that Rich Bisaccia is going to be the head coach next season. He would have – the Raiders would have to go, like, 12-0 from here on out, right, to think, like, maybe he'd get that job. It's probably not going to happen. And so normally when a head coach comes into a new job, he's like, okay, we're changing this. I'm in charge. Change the curtains. I want my desk facing north. Get rid of that quarterback and bring this guy in. Like, you make your changes and you forge that team into your identity. Rich Bisaccia is like, he's a stopgap and things are going well. Like, I get it. The last two games haven't been great, but 3-2 started out 3-0. Derek Carr's playing lights out. Defense hasn't played this good in decades. Like, you don't come in and make wholesale changes. You're not doing anything permanent, right? Like, you're taping the picture of your wife and kids on your monitor. You're not embedding it. You're not drilling the frame into your wall.
Yeah.
So it's awesome that Mayock's like, he's our guy. Because we all know what it means for now. But when you're thinking today, like, you don't think that way as a player. You're like, I'm listening to him. He's the coach as much as anybody else. I'm not thinking about next season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the thing that it's like nobody cares, dude. The other teams don't give a shit. The other teams don't care that we're going through this. It's we're going to spot you a touchdown.
They're stoked. The Broncos are like, hell yeah, all right.
Oh yeah, they're going to be freaking
dysfunction week of our game. They're coming. They're coming to Mile High when. With a new head coach and a bunch of drama, perfect.
Here's the positive X's and O's wise. They have tape of what they did when they were doing well, and they have tape of what they were doing when they weren't doing so well, offensively specifically. And I don't think it's something that you need to make wholesale changes, like you said. A coach coming in making big changes, you don't have to do that to this team. It could be just as simple as a change of philosophy with even I don't think you pulled up any of a Darren Waller's presser, but he said that, he's confident in Coach Olsen and that things are going to be a little bit simpler. So maybe those fucking crazy five sentence calls are going to be shortened down to something a little bit simpler.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious because Greg Olsen has been embedded into great, John Gruden's offense and has of course had to learn it to be able to do his offensive coordinator duties, functionally, whatever those duties are, right? John Gruden was clearly the guy who led the offense, but Greg Olsen did something, right? He wasn't just sitting around picking his nose, eating Cheerios.
Well, he was a play caller in Tampa, I think, when they won like 10 or 11 games.
Experience being a play caller.
He called every play that year, so it wasn't like he doesn't know what he's doing. He's
capable. Best case scenario, Greg Olsen, Derek Carr, Darren Waller, this whole offense takes all the good things of John Gruden's offense
and eliminates
some of the stubbornness, right? Forcing the run when it's not there. The super slow starts because you have this very strict game plan that you always do the same plays to start out, like
the fucking script that you have.
That's be positive.
And Coach Olsen likes to, he has a little Al Davis in him, just put on that white jumpsuit and go vertical, throw the ball deep. So I don't think that anyone that I know or that I've heard of has an ego like John Gruden's. So I think that when something needs to be adjusted, especially even mid-game, I think that it's going to be something that's going to be done a little bit more timely than with the old regime.
The guy I feel the worst for on this team, on the actual roster, is Derek Carr, because he was close with Gruden, like moved in next door to him, in his back pocket. Like, that's the relationship Gruden has to have with his players. And he was a good soldier this whole time. He's like, all right, well, he's on his fifth head coach in less than 7.5 seasons. He's on his 8th season, 5th head coach. He's dealt with multiple offensive coordinators. He's dealt with shit defense every single time. He's dealt with wide receivers coming in, getting traded, not panning out, players cycling constantly, an offensive line that's gotten recycled. Now he's dealing with this. It's like, dude, Ben Roethlisberger never had to deal with this shit. Tom Brady never had to deal with this stuff. Aaron Rodgers never had to deal with this. Like, he has dealt with some of the most fucked up stuff that any quarterback has had to deal with. It's like, the second things are rolling, leading the league in passing yards, you know, offense is doing great, bam, it all implodes. Derek Carr cannot catch a freaking break.
I think he's fine. I think you're trying to play this up a little bit too much.
Dude, okay. He was in tears at this presser. What? There was literally tears in his eyes. Here's how emotional Derek Carr was.
I watched it. Yeah, let's watch it.
Y'all know me, man. I don't condone that kind of talk. I don't talk that way. My kids sure as heck will never talk that way, you know. And you know, it's hard because I love the man so much. You know what I mean? Like, I have family members that have done things. I've done things that I'm glad that I'm still loved, you know. And I think more than anything, Coach needs people to help him, to love him, you know, in whatever areas, you know, that we can. But at the same time, what's right is right and what's wrong is wrong, you know.
You're looking at him and telling me, oh, yeah, he's fine. Nothing, no big deal. Water off the duck's back.
Bro, look, here's the thing. Here's what I'm afraid of. And this is what I don't want this to happen. But let's just say the last two games are more indicative of Derek Carr's play moving forward than the first three. Let's just for example, I don't want this thrown into his face like, oh, he never had a defense and he didn't have anyone to throw to and he had all this and that. It's like, can we just call his play as his play? And I'll move on from this because I don't want to dwell on this, but I just don't want this to be another excuse. If it were, God forbid, if it were to happen, that's all.
No quarterback is in a vacuum. No quarterback is in a vacuum, and all these things affect him. And you have to admit that he's had more things negatively affect him than the vast majority of quarterbacks in the NFL that have had tenure. Like,
and he's also had a lot more rope with poor results than pretty much any quarterback out there as well.
So as he should,
you can go both ways with that.
He hasn't gotten a decent shake. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I also see you putting this in your back pocket, the NFL style, and pulling it out when you need it.
What? So it's the truth.
I will not argue with you this point. After today, I will not discuss this point at all.
You won't say that losing the head coach could potentially affect the quarterback of a franchise. Are you serious?
Nope.
Are you brain dead? Losing the guy who orchestrated a very specific offense that took you 3.5 seasons to master, he's gone. You're like, nope, that has no effect on the quarterback whatsoever.
His offensive coordinator, I'm not even going to talk about it. His offensive coordinator is brain dead. His offensive coordinator is still there.
It's Gruden's offense. He was like, embodied that offense probably more so than any head coach of any offense.
You got all these built-in excuses, man.
He's an offensive coordinator with extra
power.
We're in a production
business here. You got to produce. If you don't produce, see ya. Now, I'm not saying we get rid of him. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is it just seems like
it can have no effect on Derek Carr in this
offense. I'm not saying it has no effect. I'm saying that he needs to put his big boy pants on. I'm saying he needs to put his big boy pants on and not use this as an excuse. And we need to do the same thing.
Oh, there is zero doubt in my mind that he will use it as an excuse. No question that he'll be like, well, I lost my head coach. That's why I suck.
We shouldn't either.
If it's happening, then it's true. Just because it doesn't fit like your narrative, that's like, well,
I'm not saying it doesn't. I'm not trying to push a narrative. I think you're the one trying to push a narrative. I'm saying I'm not pushing any narrative. I'm looking at the results for what they are. You're the one trying to push a narrative. I'm not. I'm saying I don't want to push any narrative.
I'm pushing a fact that if you lose a head coach who's a mastermind in offense, it could easily have a terrible effect on your quarterback.
And the,
you're
and
telling
the
me that's
word,
not true.
The key word in that sentence is can.
Yeah, we're going to have to watch and see
what
happens.
I'm going to say what you're already qualifying is if there's poor play moving forward, it's because of this. And you can't say that for any certainty. No, look, that's what you, I know how you work, RJ.
It's clearly
qualifying it.
I can't believe we're having this conversation. Like you lose, like you can't losing your coach. Well, you can't use that as an excuse. If it's true, then it's not an excuse. It's what's actually happening.
I understand. We did lose our head coach, and that's fine. But I'm tired of the excuses, man. I'm tired of everything. Everything's a reason behind.
I'm hearing tired of excuses. You're saying tired of excuses, but what I'm hearing is Derek Carr continually gets into these shit situations.
No, I'm not.
Yes, he does. He clearly does.
Dude, losing a head coach is not a shit situation. That happens all the time in the NFL. Losing not to successful quarterbacks. Wait, losing offensive coordinators does all the time to successful quarterbacks because they go on to be head coaches other places. Okay, so it's not all doom and gloom, and I'm not saying that he is going to perform poorly. I hope he doesn't. I hope that he is the quarterback that I saw the first 3 weeks, which is what I've been fucking pining and aching for this entire time.
And to refuse to acknowledge that losing Gruden could potentially negatively affect.
No. Now you're changing it. I didn't say that you're seeing that. Now you're saying it could potentially. No,
I've been seeing that the whole time.
No, but what you're saying, dude, can we just put the fast forward button?
Derek Carr has been, all I'm saying is Derek, it's acknowledged that Derek Carr has been in through some fucking shit. 5 head coaches in 7.5 seasons.
Because
an atrocious defense every single time out.
You're using a thing that he has never been given, that no other quarterback has been given that I can remember against him. Like you're using that as like a rallying cry for him. Most
quarterbacks get that. Oh, what are you talking about? His brother David Carr. He never got a fair shake because he was running for his life his entire
season. And how long was he a starter? Exactly. That's my point. He wasn't a starter once he left fucking Houston. He started a few games in New York, but that was because of injury. The thing that I'm saying is you're giving him credit and you're giving him a pass for all these bad things that Derek Carr has been through. What I'm saying is he's been giving a luxury that not a lot of quarterbacks, I don't think any quarterback has been given the performance of the teams that Derek Carr has been on. And whether it's his fault or not, it wasn't a lot of his other quarterbacks' fault either that he was on poor teams or poorly managed teams or poorly run teams. So that's one of the reasons why that he's been through so much bad stuff is because he's been given the opportunity to be a starter for so long with such poor results.
Because he hasn't been the problem. It's been the defense and the team.
And what did I just say? I said that it wasn't a lot of times it wasn't the other quarterback's fault either. It was bad organization, bad players, bad leadership that put him in a situation to play poor. Look at fucking Sam Darnold. He moved from the fucking Jets to the Panthers. The Panthers aren't like a fucking world beater organization or anything, but they're one a little bit smarter than the Jets are, and he's fucking killing it.
So that's exactly my point. That's that you're literally making my point. Derek Carr's been thrown into
what
shit.
I'm saying is
if he was thrown into a good organization. What would we have gotten out of it?
You're saying he's been through so much. Oh my God, we should give him a pass. And I'm saying is he's been given passes.
That's what you want me to say.
Time.
You want me to say we should give him a pass. I'm not saying give him a pass. I'm saying acknowledge the shit he's been through.
58 minutes of this. Okay, 58 minutes. He shouldn't be given a pass. Perfect. I agree.
Here's Carr on being a leader and the message.
From an emotional standpoint, I got a job to do. And that's never changed, no matter who the coach is, no matter who's on the team with me. I have a job to do, and that's to lead these men, especially now. They need a leader more than ever. And my job is to lead them with my actions like I always have, and my voice, just trying to be a strong voice for people to continually bring people together and continually push people in the right direction. And we're 3-2. You know, we have everything out in front of us that we've wanted from the beginning. It's not going to be with the same room of people, which is hard, but at the same time, nobody cares, you know, and you know how that goes. But for me, my message today was, we have a job to do. So it's Wednesday. If we're still in our feelings, it's too late. We got to move on.
That is a strong, badass leader that has been through some terrible shit that no quarterback has had to go through and has come out the other side stronger.
He almost cried when he said people in the room. The different people.
He was crying off and on that whole presser.
Dude, I was like, oh shit.
That whole presser. He was tearing
up. Just like he said, he has to lead with his words, his actions, and what he left out is his play. Because in the NFL, the biggest voice comes from a baller. Ballers, like if fucking AJ Hawk said it, people listen to people who have made plays in the league. You need to lead this team with your words, with your actions, and with your play. That's what you need to do.
And he's been leading with his play, and he's been leading with his example. Now it's the ones, because we talked about, right? He's a leader by example. He's playing great despite all that's happened to him. But he's not a rah-rah leader. You know what I mean?
But I like how two of the mailed in good things about Derek Carr are coming up to the surface now and becoming put in the forefront.
Yeah, because they're the two of like the same things.
No.
And they're like number 18 on the things he's good at.
He's a locker room leader, and he's also good as a face of a franchise. Those are two things that I said.
I also like how he's acknowledging, he's like, I need to be more vocal as a leader. Because that was the one thing that's not really the type of leader that he is, right? He leads by example, leads by being a badass quarterback. He's like, look at all the shit I've been through and I can still perform. Now it's like, okay, let me take this another step further. Like without Gruden here, because now there really truly is, even though Mike Mayock said there isn't a power vacuum, there is a power vacuum. Now whether it's filled correctly or like whether it's like an imploding problem or people are in their are now transforming into different roles to fill those gaps is left to be seen, right? There's clearly a hole that's been left because Gruden was the franchise. So this is what I see kind of moving forward. Gruden, more vocal. Our offensive coordinator actually being an offensive coordinator. Mike Mayock actually being a general manager. Gus Bradley continuing to be like the pumping heart of the team. Well, it was like Gruden, like how he was feeling, what he was doing was the team. I think Gus Bradley's going to be that guy now. And I think Derek Carr is going to play the way he wants to now. I think he's going to get a little bit more freedom to do some things. I think he's going to be able to, they're going to open up that passing game a little bit. Cause it sounded, Derek Carr was hinting that he saw what we were seeing Soto in those slow starts. It's like, let's stop scripting all this shit. Let's go four wide. Let's go deep some more. Like that's what's worked. That's what's worked for us. Like that's how he was leading the league in yards for a minute there with Gruden still being in three tight end sets and forcing the run. Like I can see Derek Carr hopefully playing even better moving forward. If things work out exactly right.
Our first scoring play of the season started off with four straight passes. Mm-hmm. All of them were over 8 yards in the air. And I think the shortest one was about 8 yards. Yeah. So it was a 17-yard pass. I believe it was to Bryan Edwards. I'll have to double-check the film on that, so don't quote me on that. But it was a long pass, kind of a slant or an in. Across the middle, and that was on first down. It wasn't our first possession, but it was our first scoring drive, and that set the tone for how the plays were called that game and the game after, and the game after that is we're going to come out in three wide. We're going to come out with empty sets. We're going to come out big with the wide with the running back split out wide, but still in a jumbo package, but no running back. And we're going to put we're going to put pressure with our pass catching tight ends against your big jumbo linebackers package. You know, it makes a lot of sense when we and this is one thing that you said last episode that made a lot of sense. The one thing you said that made a lot of sense was that John Gruden, fucking John Gruden coaches for the team that he wants. And I think now the coaches that we have are going to coach for the strengths of the team that we actually have on the field. And no one has a better pulse of that than Derek Carr. Yeah. And I think he's going to be given a lot more freedom like he did in 2016 when he was, you know, balling out. And the last time he really balled out and it was pushing the ball down the field and having the pass set up the run. And I think that's what's going to happen now. Hopefully it's what I've been asking for the longest time. And that's why I said last week, that's almost, you know, so annoyed is because I didn't see that John Gruden had that in him to change and adjust his philosophy to what we have and what our team strengths were. I don't see Olsen or Carr or anybody really having that issue.
And it's also like Derek Carr's issues have, you know, been made clear for a while. And he's worked on them pretty well. Like the fumbling, he's worked on that really well. Moving better in the pocket, he's improved on that this season. But maximize what he's best at. His brain. Pre-snap.
Dude.
Knowing everyone's roles. That's what he's like Peyton Manning-esque in that part of football. So instead of like handcuffing that part of his game, let it be free like a dove. Like, really let him sink or swim. Like, all right, you call this series, Carr. Like, let's see it, right? Like, he's proven he's got that kind of brain and that grasp of that offense.
For as much as I think Andy Reid is a just big, fat, walrus-faced, fucking cheeseburger-swallowing motherfucker.
You made him sound like a cool guy, though. Walrus-faced, cheeseburger-swallowing motherfucker. That sounds like a guy.
If you fucking drink scotch and eat cheeseburgers, like, dude, you can be my friend. I don't give a shit. But he coaches to the strengths of his players. He scripts and builds an offense around the players that he has. Before we knew what like players like Mecole Hardman could be and other guys that he's had in the past that were in that position, it was just Tyreek Hill getting the ball, and they just get Tyreek Hill the ball, Tyreek Hill, Kelsey the ball. And now he uses Tyreek Hill as a kind of a pseudo decoy at times, and you see the Mecole Hardmans of the world going deep against the defense because he's coaching towards the strengths of his team as opposed to this play you could just plug any player into this play and this play is going to work. And to his credit, a lot of the stuff has worked, but it's not maximizing the potential of the team.
One last thing before we get to our guest, Sanjeet T. I didn't pull the auto because it's kind of like voiced weird and it was like a question and it was like kind of trailed off. But basically the gist was Darren Waller was at the presser today as well. And he seems like he's in a good place, but acknowledged like kind of how overwhelming all this is. And he was asked about a reporter because, like the Friday email was pretty racial from Gruden. And then the rest were like, whoever leaked it was like, oh, man, the racial one didn't do enough. Let's get a girl in there. Let's make it homosexual. Let's talk about Roger Goodell. You know what I mean? It's like, let's hit the other soft spots, right? Let's pluck all the other strings. And that's what eventually got him fired. And so the journalist was asked Darren Waller. I don't think he was trying to like do like a gotcha question with Darren Waller. I thought it was a legitimate question. No. And he's like, hey, Darren, how do you feel, you know, being a black guy that the racial stuff on Friday wasn't enough, but it took these other things for the hammer to come down on Gruden? And Waller's like, that's not something that I worry about. That doesn't help us win this weekend. That's not something like I have my feelings toward it, but this isn't something that's going to concern me. Like it's not something in my hands that I can control. And so I'm not going to concern with it. And I feel like that's the best kind of quote to how I feel like the pulse of the Raiders is now, right? Carl Nassib's obviously taking a day off. You know,
I can't even imagine what fucking Carl Nassib's going through right now, dude.
May I put it best? He's in a village of one, right? Like if you're a black player and you're offended by and John Gruden's comments really got you. You've got 30 other guys that look like you that you can, hey, how do you feel about this? Oh, you relate to each other. Like, Nassib's on an island, man. But
yeah, dude.
But he did put it perfectly where it's like Mayock said, from we have every side of the spectrum, from people that are just completely infuriated and offended and hurt and sad about what Gruden said, to people that just have 100% empathy for Gruden and everything in between. Right.
Yeah.
But the pulse of the team that I'm getting is basically Waller.
Yeah.
Look, there's stuff I can't control. We have a game on Sunday.
We still gotta play. Yeah.
And we're professionals. Like, no matter.
Derek Carr said it best, dude. Yeah. No one cares. Yeah. We're going through some shit right now, but nobody cares. We still gotta show up on Sunday and play.
Yep.
And you know, like, I kind of get where Nassib is coming from, in a sense that I moved to an elementary school in the middle of fourth grade. Mm-hmm. And I went from an elementary school that was predominantly Hispanic to, I mean, I think me, this dude Joey that I was in my same grade, and my brother were the only three like Hispanic kids in the whole school. Mm-hmm. Everyone else was white. It was, I think, two Asians in there, I think. But it's like, dude, they would say shit to me all the time. I had to go by John because I didn't want them to make fun of me. Mm-hmm. I would go in the first day of school and I would go to the teachers, but can you call me John instead of Juan? Because they would make fun of me. Whenever we had a substitute teacher that fourth grade year, they would always say, you know, they would go down the roll list and they'd be like Juan, and they'd be like, oh, Juan, one, two, three, all this shit. And it's like, it's weird when you look around and nobody has the same background. I mean, RJ knows this. My ex-wife is white. And it was, I didn't know that I missed sharing my background and how I grew up with someone until I started dating somebody after we broke up, who is Mexican like I am. And it's like, you have that extra level of like inside jokes and things because, you know, all the superstition shit like that. Mm-hmm. And it's
parking
like
your cars on the lawn, all the fun stuff.
Barbecuing in the front yard. Dude, yep. It's everyone does it. So I get what he's feeling when he looks around and doesn't see anyone else like him or anyone else who wants to admit that they're like him. You know what I'm saying? And because that's got to be tough for that person as well. If there is any, I'm sure there is, but it's, I can't even imagine what he's going through, man, because he had the strength and the trust, and a lot of that was Gruden, because Gruden was basically the face of that franchise, and you have that belief and trust in the leader of your franchise to be able to come out and have that support system behind you to find out that guy was just fucking full of shit. Mm-hmm. And that guy really didn't care that much about your plight and was actually, you know, rallying against it, against what you stood for and against who you are as a person. That's gotta be tough, man. That's pretty tough. I don't envy the position he's in right now. That's some shit to go through.
For more on all this, our guest Sanjeet T joins us next. All right, joining us now, friend of the show, nay, best friend of the show, the creator of the Las Vegas Raiders Network, one of the best YouTube creators in all of Raider creatordom, Sanjeet T. What's going on, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. A crazy situation going on with the Raiders, but what can you do, man? We're not in charge, and we know there's a lot going on. So it's interesting. I'm very excited to talk about it. Thank you guys for having me back, man. RJ, Soto, appreciate both you guys, man. It's always a good time.
Of course, like you're definitely the dude that we wanted for a situation like this. Like, we try to get good guests. Like, you know, we had a Bears guy on last week, and you know, players and stuff were all good. But when all hell breaks loose, we need Sanjeet T in here. So we're recording this Wednesday afternoon. Mike Mayock just did his press conference. Obviously, all, you know, Friday night was when the first email was exposed about John Gruden, the racist trope, and then of course all hell broke loose on Monday. What's been the last like 5 days for you? Like as a Raiders fan, I can't remember anything quite like this in the 30 years I've been following.
Yeah. It's a crazy situation because, when the first situation happened Friday, I didn't think that was enough for him to resign. Mm-hmm. but Monday specifically, or even fired, right? Like Mark Davis could have fired him, right? But Monday, the situation was much worse, right? Like those those emails that came out on Monday were much worse. And I love John Gruden. I think he's a fantastic coach. I know, you know, things haven't worked out yet, but I think we're headed that direction. I think the team was there. I think we were, you know, about a season out, and we're making a playoff push. Even this year, we could have made a playoff push.
Yeah.
But I will say this, you know, what John Gruden said was not acceptable. And you can't continue with the coach that had those things put out on him. Mm-hmm. For the sole reason that, you know, we have a gay player in the locker room. Although Carl Nassib's the only open gay player, there's probably 100 other gay players in the league, right? Yeah. The Raiders could have another gay player. We don't know, right? Just because they're not open doesn't mean there are none. More than half the league's black, right? So we don't know how these players kind of felt about Gruden and felt about those comments. It made sense. You had to have let John Gruden go. How do you guys feel about the whole situation? Like, do you guys think Rich Bisacci, and I hope I'm saying his name right, do you guys think that's the correct decision as the interim head coach?
Well, my first thought was Gus Bradley. He's been a head coach before. He's obviously doing great with the defense. He's like a shining beacon of happiness, which kind of looks like this dark black hole, pardon the pun, of the Raiders could use right now. But he's got his hands full with the defense, right? Other head coaches, or other coaches with head coaching experience, Tom Cable, boy, does he have his hands full with the offensive line. So it's like, all right. And Mike Mayock made a pretty good point about special teams coaches. They kind of have their fingers in everything. Like, you're using backup tight ends and backup linebackers, and special teams has been awesome this season for us. Like, kicking game has been phenomenal. Kickoff coverage has been great. We can use, you know, some bigger breaks, but special teams have played pretty well. And he's probably, I don't want to see the easiest job, but, you know, we could have someone else pick up some of the slack with special teams. So he wasn't my first choice, but the longer I've heard it, the more I'm like, okay, I think this makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, the thing with special teams is you have to be organized and you have to be prepared, because it's such a small part of the game as far as time-wise, but it's so important. If you screw up special teams, you put your team in a bad position. If you screw up extra points, you screw up field goals, you screw up punts, stuff like that, you're given a big-time field position. And that's why someone who is very meticulous and very detail-oriented usually is, you know, starts off as a special team coordinator or a special team assistant, stuff like that. So as far as that goes, I think it's a good placement for him to move up into that head coach. Because basically what you're doing is you're just running, you know, Greg Olsen's going to call the plays on offense. Gus Bradley's going to call the plays on defense. And you're just basically running the show, making sure that there's everyone, the right people are on the field. You know, I'm going to punt here, I'm going to go for it here, stuff like that. And those are detail things. Those are things that if you're a detail-oriented person, you already know what you should do in certain situations. So, yeah, I think it's a good hire. And honestly, I couldn't agree with you more as far as the progression of what we heard from about Gruden's emails. As far as a single email, I think one email can be explained away at one point in time. Like he even said, I was in a bad point at that time. I was upset. I didn't mean it racially. It was more of a, it was a pretty lame excuse. You know, rubber lips is a liar and this and that. Yep. Yeah, well, you know, could have been done a little bit differently. But, okay, I understand it. It's not good. You shouldn't do it. But, you know, we all make mistakes. But, I mean, he had emails up until he was hired by the Raiders in 2018. It was a long span of things. And, I mean, I text RJ and Rory this. No other franchise in sports has done more for the advancement of the underrepresented. Yeah. I don't mean any type of race or anything. Women, racial minorities, ethnic minorities, different alternative lifestyles, stuff like that. Like, the Raiders have done more for that community. They were one of the first people to do like AIDS walks and like sponsor things for, like, this is like the late 80s, early 90s. Yeah. So this is stuff that they've been on the forefront of a lot of things. And there would be no Tom Flores as a coach or a quarterback even, yeah, or Art Shell or Amy Trask or a Jeannie O. There wouldn't be any of those people in the NFL, you know, blazing the trail for the people behind them, yep, without the Raiders organization. And, you know, fucking Mark Davis, dude, he is such a thick dick owner, man. His dad's dream was to have a state-of-the-art stadium, right? And that's why he moved to LA. That's why he moved back to Oakland. He got lied to. He got finagled this and that. He never got his stadium. He finally got his stadium, and they're like, okay, you can't have your fans there. So he said, I'm not going to go either then.
Yep.
You know, and he's he walked in there, and I can almost tell you exactly what happened. John, I got the rest of these emails. How do you want to handle this? Like it's over. So how do you want to handle it? Like, basically, he technically did resign, but you know for a fact it was, if you don't quit, we're going to fire you. So yeah, how do you want to handle this? And it was the right call. And fucking, he did it like a man. He walked up. Where's Gruden? He walked into the facility. Where's Gruden? We need to meet right now, face to face. Let's close the door. Let's hammer this out, because this is not going to happen. It's not going to work anymore. So I totally agree with it. As far as how the NFL is handling the rest of the 700,000 emails, I think that's kind of bullshit. Absolutely. You know, it is not a witch hunt or anything like that, but if you have that much information, it's like you're holding these emails over people's heads just in case they cross you again in the future. Mm-hmm. Like, why is, I mean, I'm not trying to play the pity game on John Gruden, but why was John Gruden singled out? There was emails going back and forth about these subjects. So mm-hmm. Did Dan Snyder and his staff just go out, get off scot-free? Like, I don't know, man. It just seems real fishy that one single person will be singled out in 700,000 emails.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is John Gruden sent emails to people, right? He didn't send them to himself. These weren't his notes or thoughts. They were emails to other people. So what were the responses by those other people, right? You guys think that someone else didn't say at least one other thing? There's 600,000 plus emails, right? Almost 700,000 emails. If John, and I'm glad that John Gruden decided to resign and not make this into a big deal, because that would really ruin the rest of our season, right? We still have a full season. We have 12 games left. We're 3-2, right? We're still over 500. We need, what, 7 wins to potentially make the playoffs in the next 12. That's still doable. We still have a good roster. We still have a good team. And I'm glad John Gruden was able to just step away without turning this into a big situation and really holding it over the team, right? Saying, yeah, you know, how does it turn out if John Gruden says, I'm not resigning, like, you know, I'm going to stay here. And then even that too, like, Mark Davis is upset that John Gruden is no longer the coach, right? If I don't know if you guys saw the tweet by Paul Gutierrez. He tweeted it out just about an hour or two ago. In that tweet, he said something about Mark Davis and how, or he asked Mark Davis a question, and Mark Davis said something like, oh, go talk to the NFL. It seems like they have all the right answers, right? That, to me, that kind of comes off as like he's upset that John Gruden's no longer here. We know they've had a good relationship as well in the past. Could you guys imagine if John Gruden says, hey, I'm gonna sue the NFL because I was targeted, and, you know, it goes to court and the court releases all these emails? I'd love to go through those emails because I can find you guys things really quickly, right? And maybe we should do that. Maybe that is something we need to do, right? If we're going to target John Gruden, why not hold all these other coaches and executives and even owners, right? Could you imagine some of the things that the owners have said about players or about, you know, other people in the league? I just find it unfair that John Gruden was targeted specifically, but he still said those things at the end of the day. He still was – He's a grown adult, right? He's not 15 years old. He was 48 years old 10 years ago, right? He's an adult. He has to be held accountable for things that he's saying.
Well, it's like, I think the NFL opened up a can of worms that they weren't ready for, because, absolutely, you know, let's say it was, you know, someone out to get John Gruden, which is certainly a plausible situation, right? Certainly plausible that someone just like out to get John Gruden for whatever motivation they have, right? Now you've got the Players Association, media groups all saying, let's see all these emails. Like, you, yep, buried it for, yep, Dan Snyder. Let's see all of them. Yeah. Like, and Sanjeev, I take it one step further. Like, yeah, owners versus owners. Imagine what they're saying. Players and coaches, what are they saying to each other? Players to players, owners to owners. Like, this isn't a like, yeah, like, again, John Gruden should be held responsible for what he said, but this isn't John Gruden is like one bad apple in a barrel. Like, the NFL is full of people like this. The country is full of people like this. Like, if everybody was under the same microscope over their emails of the last 10 years, and the standard was, if you say anything close to what John Gruden said, you're fired. Half this country would be unemployed. Like, again, not a knock on Gruden, but it's like, is the NFL really ready for this? Is the NFL really ready to say, like, okay, well, we're only going to give you these like little morsels of this information that we have. Everyone's like, no, we want it all. Like you don't get to pick and choose who gets destroyed by their words and their actions. Like, that's not for you to decide. You don't get to pick and choose. So it could be, I don't know how the NFL is going to handle this, because this pressure is going to go anywhere. And then you said, like, imagine if John Gruden sues, like, he still can, just because he's like comfortable and quiet now. That doesn't mean he's not building a lawsuit. And again, like, he has potentially, you know, over, you know, $60 to $70 million still on his contract.
Yep.
Is he just going to walk away from that? Guaranteed. There's some lawyer in Vegas that's like, hey, John, like, you know, for 15%, I can get you a chunk of that money again. Like, this thing easily could be far from over. This could be years in the making. The legalities between Gruden, the Raiders, Mark Davis, the NFL, Goodell, like, this could go on for a long time legally.
Well, another thing really quickly is, you know, there's 30 or 40 former employees of the Washington football team that's currently suing them, right? That's the reason why these emails are being looked into. So that outcome could happen before, you know, if John Gruden decides to pursue something, the outcome from that 30 to 40 employees, that could happen first. And there's a potential that the emails get out there for that reason. Mm-hmm. Right. I think they kind of reached out and said, hey, we basically want to see these emails. Right. They find it hard that the only person that said anything among 700,000 emails was John Gruden, someone irrelevant to the situation, which is a great point.
So let's get to the, like, football part of all this, right? Like you said, and Mayock put it perfectly. He's like, yeah, normally when the interim coaches are put in, it's week 15 after a crappy season, when everyone's already kind of like given up on the season. Like, not the case for the Raiders, 3-2, right? Yeah. Like, it's still very much a season. So what do you make of kind of the dynamic that's at the Raiders right now, coaching wise, what you've heard from Mayock? We barely got a little taste of how the players are doing. What do you think of this specific Raiders organization, coaches, players, etc.? How do you think this group of guys, and we'll find out more details as people talk throughout the week, but just at what you know, and you know a lot about this organization, how do you think they're built to handle this and move on this season?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I will say this, this Raiders staff, players are in a very unique position. How many teams out there can say they have three head coaches, or, you know, ex head coaches, basically coaching now positional groups, right? You got Tom Cable coaching the offensive linemen, Gus Bradley coaching the defense. Those are, and Rod Marinelli with the defensive line. Those are ex NFL head coaches. Those are guys with a ton of experience, a ton of great leadership qualities. Rich Bisaccia is one of the most well-respected coaches out there, right? I think Eric Harris came out, and a couple other guys, I think it was Bryce Butler, came out and talked a little bit about him. I think the Raiders are in a very unique position from that perspective. Now, obviously, with the whole John Gruden situation, some players are going to feel a certain type of way, right? Carl Nassib requested a personal day. KJ Wright came out and did an interview with, I believe, Josina Anderson. I don't know if you guys have seen that. That was posted, I think, in the last couple hours. He talked a little bit about it as well. And, you know, from the way he kind of talked about it, it clearly at least bothered him, right? Mm-hmm. He made it clear that from his perspective, those were a prejudice comments, right? I don't think he used the word racist, but he used the word prejudice. At the same time, he did say that he believes John Gruden deserves to be back in the NFL. But with, you know, all that happening, like, we still play the Denver Broncos, like, literally in 4 weeks, right? I'm sorry, in 4 days. That's right there, right?
I think of, like, how to handle, like, a room like that. Because, and we've talked about this on the show before, of how, like, there's great leadership by example on this team, but there isn't a lot of great grab your face mask, get in your face leadership on this team. Derek Carr leads by example. Darren Waller leads by example. Before Rodney Hudson, quiet, but lead by example. A lot of like good leadership players on this team, but not a lot of just like, hey guys, like get over it, right? Like we have a job to do. Like feel how you want to feel. Like you can feel how, however that is, but there's no one person just like standing up on a chair in that locker room being like, wake the hell up. Like we have a football game. That's my, cause I feel like this team is built to not backbite or fight or infight very much. But I also wonder who's going to be the dude to like, just like I said, jump on a chair with the megaphone and get guys to wake up and get out of whatever funk that they're in because of this whole mess.
Yep. Yeah.
I don't know who that is.
We're in a very unique position, man. Very, very unique. I do want to see how the team responds, right? Like, let's be honest. The offense was flat the last two games, against the Bears, especially like 9 points. That's just not acceptable, man. You got to score more points. The defense did their part. The offense has now, in my opinion, lost us the last two games. And Derek Carr looks nothing like the way he looked in weeks 1, 2, and 3, right? Like he doesn't look the same, and it's really hindered this team. And at the same time, you know, you can say, okay, was the Bears game, was the outcome of that game because of the email that came out on Friday? Or could you say that there's something else going on? And I don't think that was the issue with the Bears game. I think there's something else going on with the offense side of the football. Mm-hmm. You know, you can blame John Gruden partly, right? Maybe it was his play calling, his decision-making. You can also blame Derek Carr, right? At the same time, Derek Carr won us games 1 through 3. With week 4 and 5, you can even make the argument he was the reason why we lost, right? And not necessarily that he did something bad. He just didn't do what he did weeks 1 through 3, right? What do you guys think? What do you guys think was the reason why the Raiders came out so flat on the offensive side of the ball?
I felt like it was a very old school Gruden-esque type. From what I saw of like the routes and everything, it was just very short, intermediate stuff. Nothing really deep. You know, run to set up the pass, stuff like that. It's like, yeah, that's not how our team is constructed. You know, we have to pass the ball, spread the ball out, throw the ball deep, and run as a change of pace. You know, and it just seemed like John Gruden mailed it in the last game. You know, it just seemed like he mailed it in, and I think more so
he had other things on his mind.
Yeah. I think more so in the Charger game, it was our inability to block pretty much anybody, and that changing the game plan a little bit. I think the adjustments came a little bit late. So after the first half and the second half, that's when we score our touchdowns. But I don't see that as them coming out flat. I think it's just more so they came up against you know, Linval Joseph and Joey Bosa and the rest of the crew were just, you know, in the backfield and making things difficult for us to do what we did in weeks 1 through 3. Yeah. I think the first half of the Bears game, it was just old school Gruden, you know, dink and dunk type of stuff. And you know, the Bears were ready for it. I mean, the Bears weren't world beaters, like I said, against the past. They were like ranked one spot lower than us. I think 13th or 14th, something like that. We were 13th. So it wasn't like they were like the Bills or anything like that. Or, you know, it's like they could be passed on. They have been passed. Even with Robert Quinn and Mack and all those guys, you know, they've still been able to be thrown on. And it just seems like when they came out flat, and one thing that really, really struck me after the Charger game, Carr said that after the game, we went to certain guys and we talked to them about things they need to do better. And I said, well, that's a good level of consciousness to be able to do that, a good level of leadership. Well, the highest level is to identify it as it's happening and address it right then and there. So we don't have an entire game or an entire half that's like that. You have a couple of drives like, all right, dude, let's get this going. This is what we're doing wrong. And so it takes multiple levels. It takes coaching. It takes the players. It takes the players that are receiving the message to be able to internalize it. And then we see the difference on the field. So can we come out of a funk? we haven't shown that if we played bad, that we played better enough to win a game. It's like we have to be in the game from the beginning in order to be able to make it a game. Even when we were down, 14-0, it was still like, halfway through the first quarter, it wasn't like it was halftime or anything like that. It was, that was more so mistakes than anything, but it doesn't seem like this team has it to change on a dime. It's more so, okay, let's just keep doing what we're doing and it'll eventually work until, the last 2 weeks we've seen it. It hasn't.
Yep. Well, look, from the Bears perspective, the Bears game only from a micro perspective, like the issues were semi-obvious, right? Offensive line was atrocious. Our normally shorthanded guys were dropping balls. Like Renfro dropped a ball. Waller dropped two. He's only, I think, credited for one drop, but it was two in my eyes. Defense still kind of been pretty consistent for us, but we're not getting any turnovers, which would be awesome. We're just not really getting them. But those kind of seemed, and like what Soto mentioned, lazy play calling by John Gruden. That feels to me like something like errors you would make when you are distracted. So like those are the micro issues from a macro problem, which is your head coach knows he's on the hot seat. Your head coach knows like his life as he knows it may be over. Like John Gruden is a celebrity.
Yeah.
Like you're automatically a celebrity if you're an NFL head coach. He was a celebrity 2 decades ago. Right. He is, this hits him different than it hits others. Yep. So, it seemed like those were symptoms that resulted from someone that was very, very, a head coach that was very distracted and players that kind of felt that. Mike Mayock said in his presser today, was asked straight up, like, do you think that performance against the Bears was because of all these issues? He said flat out, no.
Yeah.
That's his job to say no to that.
Exactly.
So I don't know. I know you're busy, Sanjeev. I do. I'm very curious what you think of this. Losing John Gruden outside of the kind of locker room feel, the kind of like the slap in the face that this all is. What do you think the Raiders actually lose football wise by losing John Gruden? And do they gain anything by losing John Gruden?
Yeah. So I think one of the things you lose right off the bat is John Gruden, in my opinion, anyways. And you guys can ask players. From the players that I've spoken to, they love John Gruden. They love his energy. They say, one of the players that I reached out to recently said that he would go to war for John Gruden, right? Like, that's the type of energy that Gruden brings you. So right off the bat, the Raiders are going to lose that, right? At the same time, I think Gruden did a great job designing plays. Maybe you can question his, kind of how he called plays. But in terms of designing plays, he does a great job, right? I think one of the things the Raiders do gain from this whole entire situation is they do get a new direction. And I almost feel like the Raiders kind of needed it, right? Mm-hmm. How many times have we started off 3-and-out? I think the announcer might have announced it during the Bears game that this was maybe, the 11th straight time they went 3-and-out to start a straight game. That's unacceptable. Yeah. After the four, how hard is it to get 10 yards? Throw a 10-yard curl route to Darren Waller. Like, how hard is it to get a first down? And that starts with John Gruden, because John Gruden scripts plays to begin games. So if you're scripting a play, or if you're scripting 12 plays to start the game, and you're going 3-and-out for 11 straight times to start the game, you're killing the momentum right then and there. Mm-hmm. Right? I know we won weeks 1 through 3, but two of those games came into overtime. And you can argue that the ball could have bounced either way. The coin flip could have went either way.
That's what I said.
We could have easily lost two of those three games, right? Of the first three that we won. Even then, in my opinion, the Raiders outperformed the Steelers, but there was a point where the score was 7-6 and they were up, but we had outperformed them in the first quarter and a half of the game, right? At the same time, when you look at John Gruden's decision-making, how many times have we went for it on fourth down when we're in field goal range so far this season? I believe there's been 4 times where we went for it on 4th-and-1. And I believe 3 of those 4 times we didn't get it. We turned the ball over, turnover on downs, right? You can take it in so many different ways. At the end of the day, John Gruden's had how many years, and how many other coaches would have had that same amount of years, right? Mm-hmm. And another thing to kind of know is the Raiders kind of went the non-traditional way with John Gruden, right? They kind of treated John Gruden like he was Bill Belichick, right? Yeah. Bill Belichick, I believe he's the only coach that has full power, right? His coaching staff, the player personnel, Bill Belichick is fully in charge. And John Gruden had that.
Even Robert Kraft has made Belichick do some things he didn't want to do. Like, he made him trade Garoppolo, and he didn't want to do that.
Yeah, but, you know, that's the owner, and that's a little bit different, right? But, like, there's no GM that's or president that's going to tell Bill, like, hey, this is what we're going to do, right? Bill controls everything, and John Gruden kind of had that power with the Raiders, and I think that's the wrong way to approach things. In my opinion, I think the correct way is just do it the traditional way. Get a GM that handles the decision-making from up top, you know, the scouting, the player selection, and let the coach coach. Right, I think you need to separate those two things out. And I think that was one of the issues the Raiders had. Now, Mike Mayock apparently has 51% control of the roster decisions this season, as Rich Bisacci has 49%, according to Mark Davis. Let's see what that means, right? Like, I know for a fact John Gruden loved Derek Carr.
Yeah.
But are we sure that Mike Mayock loves Derek Carr, right? Are we 100% sure with that? And at the same time, John Gruden wanted to be a run-first team. Is that what the direction is going to be going forward on the offense of the ball? At the same time, what does Greg Olsen feel about Derek and Marcus? Like, does he feel like one quarterback might give us a better opportunity? You know, John would have never made that switch.
Mm-hmm.
But do one of these guys make that switch? Like, if Derek Carr doesn't perform well, do we make that switch? Because I would argue that against the Chargers and Bears, we were flat way too many times. And other coaches around the league would have made that switch, in my opinion, right? And they would have put – and even if it's not the long-term switch, at least for that game, they would have tried it at least one drive. And I know Marcus was hurt and he wasn't playing, but how does Mike, Greg, and Rich feel about Derek versus Marcus? Because let's face it, you go as far as your quarterback takes you.
Ain't that the truth? Next time you come on, Sanji, we promise to have a lot more fun. Then have this depressing John Gruden's gone conversation. Make sure you check out Sanjeet T on Las Vegas Raiders Network on YouTube. Follow him on Twitter at Sanjeet_T. All right, buddy. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. Look forward to the next time.
Thank you, Sanjeet. So with everything that happened off the field, everything that happened with John Gruden, everything that's going on with the new interim head coach, we still played a football game last Sunday. It feels like a million years ago.
But I mean, we showed up to a game. We showed up to a game.
We lost to the Bears 20-9. Here's the good, the bad, and the ugly.
All right, here we go. Starting with the good. Fucking Denzel Perryman. 12 tackles, 10 solo. This dude, where would we be without that flipping that fifth for a sixth in Perryman? Where would we be without that?
I thought Gerald McCoy was the steal of this offseason. It's turned into Denzel Perryman. Look at this. Look at this. Only player in NFL with double-digit tackles in every game this season.
Navarro Bowman played 5 games for the Raiders that year.
And he was such an afterthought, right? Denzel Perryman, you're like, what? All right, a run-stuffing middle linebacker.
I didn't say that. Remember I told you he was a high-ranked, like the second or third-ranked linebacker last year by PFF.
But it was a real like red flag that was Panthers, right? Should I have him for the Panthers?
Panthers, yeah.
He didn't even make it through preseason with them. They're like, all right, peace, dog. We don't want you.
Well, the thing is, it's like they were happy with the defense the way it was, and Perryman had this like lingering hamstring issue. He hasn't had any issues with it now. Mm-hmm. But dude, the fucking Panthers paid his bonus. He stuck around that long. They paid him his roster bonus, and then they fucking shipped him off for nothing.
And it cost us a fifth for a sixth.
We sent a fifth, and we got back Perryman and a sixth.
Fifth for a sixth.
Fuck, bro.
That oozes of a Mayock move.
Is a fucking. Hey, you know what? That loses a fucking Gus Bradley. Like, hey, dude, this guy's a fucking baller. Let's get this guy on the team. So Denzel Perryman, you're a fucking stud. Amik Robertson, 7 tackles, 5 solo. He limited Al Robinson to 4 receptions and 32 yards. Allen Robinson is a fucking stud, dude. I don't know if people can appreciate how good Allen Robinson is. Allen Robinson is like a stronger, girthier, thicker version. Maybe not quite as fast, but still as good as 50-50 balls and high-pointing balls as Mike Williams ever was, especially this year.
Yeah.
This guy's a fucking baller, dude. And
he just can't get a decent quarterback thrown to him.
Dude, he made fucking what's his face look halfway decent sometimes.
Trubisky,
fucking Trubisky.
Yeah,
and Trubisky's like, fuck it, man. I'm just gonna throw it up to fucking Robinson and see if it just fucking let Jesus take the wheel from there. You know, the
Culpepper to Moss technique.
Yeah, dude, and he fucking giving up what 5'9" and 6'4".
Mm-hmm.
Dude, that's fucking 7 inches, bro. That's 7 inches of height and that long, the long arms and big hands that Allen Robinson has. That's a fucking damn good job by Amik Robertson. Jonathan Abram, he had a couple of stops on third downs to force punts. And the one that I wanted to focus on was there was a scramble play where Fields kind of showed his hand a little bit too early. He's a young quarterback and he kind of did that where he tucked the ball to run it a little bit too early when he could have maybe done a couple of pump fakes and frozen Abram a little bit. But as soon as Abram, who was deep in the secondary, saw that he was going to start running the ball, he darted in and he annihilated Justin Field. So great job by fucking Jonathan Abram as far as that goes, because he's showing some development there.
It's so weird that those the three first rounders that got picked up three seasons ago, Josh Jacobs, Clay Farrell, and Jonathan Abram, maybe only Abram's going to stick around.
Yeah, is, right.
It's only five games after playing like, you know, being hurt or playing like crap. But that's the one dude where it's like, maybe we will have to pay him. That's really weird to think.
You know what, dude? He's fucking playing like he's the one that we need to keep now. So,
yep.
AJ Cole, the third AJ Cole, triple hockey sticks, four punts, 224 yards total. 56 average. His long was 70 yards. A 70-yard punt.
Yep.
Dude, where would we be without this man?
It's Rich Bisaccia's shining light of the team. Special teams.
Fuck, right? Man.
Hunts and Carlson crushing it, too.
Yeah. So, that's another good. And the last good is Yannick Ngakoue had two sacks in the game. The only
first sacks of the season, right? Isn't this for sacks?
I think he's had one before.
It's one?
Yeah. So I think he has three total.
He's been low on sacks, but he's been productive. He's been getting pressures and breaking up plays, but
he did have a rough penalty. He did have a rough penalty that extended a drive, but he did get two sacks. So we'll try to keep this positive here. That's the good. Here comes the bad.
Okay.
Max Crosby, no recorded stats. No tackles, nothing.
Nope.
So
he got pressures, but that's not technically recorded, right?
No, it's not. It's not a stat. You don't get.
It's not on the stat line.
Pressure, no. But he did get a roughing penalty on 3rd and 22, that allowed Chicago to, extend a drive, which is scored a touchdown on. Which, that's the second time we've seen him do that. We gotta, watch that going forward. Also, the bad. I'm not gonna get into it too much because I say it every fucking episode. But Leatherwood and Parker. Countless penalties, blown assignments. It was bad. And it didn't seem like moving him to guard helped his pass protection any. There was a play that I showed you guys on Twitter where James and Leatherwood ended up blocking each other on a run play. They were like blocking each other. I'm like,
it was the best block they had all game.
Yeah, either one of them made the play. Also, the O-line in general didn't play all that great, and wide receivers dropping balls and stuff. That's just not good.
Uncharacteristic
of them. Yeah. Edwards. Again, Derek Carr, unfortunately, 22 of 35, 206 yards, but zero touchdowns, one pick, a 5.9 yards per attempt. That's rough, man.
Yeah.
That's pretty low. So hopefully we can change that and push the ball a little bit further down the field this next coming up against the Broncos. So that leads you to the ugly, and not surprisingly, the ugly John David Gruden and all his fucking shenanigans and all his bullshit. That's pretty damn ugly, but that's not the only thing that's ugly. the NFL for not releasing the rest of the findings from the fucking Washington football team investigation. Mm-hmm. Over fucking 700,000 almost 700,000 emails, and Gruden is the only one to go down. Fucking Daniel Snyder, no one else in the fucking Washington football team organization goes down for anything. It's just Gruden. So that was pretty fucking ugly by the NFL as well.
But ugly. So we've been on for almost 2 hours, and we haven't even gotten to Broncos on Sunday. So we're going to do what we did last week. We're not trying to make this a thing, but because we went so balls deep on all the Gruden stuff, we don't want this podcast to be 3 hours long. So we'll do another YouTube-only pregame breakdown of Broncos Raiders. We'll do it on Saturday. So it'll come out about Saturday, about midday. So we'll still give you a breakdown of the of Sunday's game, but it just won't be on this podcast. You got to go to our YouTube if you're listening on the podcast to watch that. Again, not something we're trying to do regularly, but I've had back-to-back monster shows, and I think you can understand why.
Yeah.
So I'm in a little bit of a conundrum, Soto. Do we continue to end the show the same way with the knock on wood if you're with me? It's pretty cool. Gruen's not the only guy to have ever done it, but he's kind of why we did it. Do we still end the show that way?
I'm thinking we should just try to maybe think of something else. I kind of want to separate myself from that. I honestly think we need
is it too problematic for you? You don't want your boss to see that you're knocking on wood in a podcast?
I don't give a shit. I don't think he gives a shit either. Yeah. My boss actually played in the NFL. He was a kicker. I don't know, man. We can do it if you want to do it. I'm down with it. I think we do need to change the fucking intro of the fucking show. Think you're out of that intro. I don't know. Maybe we just start with the touchdown Raiders.
Do we purge him from the history of the show like the Bucks did with the Circle of Honor, getting rid of
bro,
him?
Bro, do you really want him to lead off our freaking show?
When you break up with a chick or when you broke up, when you got divorced, did you like go through your social media and delete all the photos?
I didn't do it right away, but I did eventually because when I started dating again, I just didn't want to have that. Well, who's that in your fucking Instagram? Oh, that's my ex-wife.
Yeah.
Like, no, I didn't.
You got to have that story early.
Yeah. I want to just move on from it. You know, I saw a picture of her through a mutual friend of her for the guy she's dating now. And it's like, honestly, like I was like, oh, okay. And I just moved on. And I was like, cool. That actually felt really good to be able to just like, you know, see that and like not think anything of it. And anyone who I'm dating, it's not any of their business. It's none of their business.
Yeah. I was asking like a one word answer. That's what I was
looking for.
Okay. So maybe we don't knock anymore.
Okay. How do just we end the show then?
Be careful who you email.
Oh, goodbye. Get the fuck out of here. Hey, if you're down with us, let me hear a Raiders.
Good enough. See you next time. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Autumn Windbags on Steroids Monster Show. Glad you stuck with us the entire time. Thank you, Sanjeet Teet, as always, for joining us. Make sure you follow us on all the social media, subscribe on YouTube, and tell your friends about it. It's always fun. Great conversation started. Till next time. Later.